find those moments where you could be more courageous.
The website blacked out with the sentence, "The president stole your land."
This is Speaking of Purpose, where we talk to real people making real change. When asked to name a purpose-driven brand, most people will say Patagonia. The self-proclaimed activist company is the poster child for consistently living their values and putting their money where their mouth is. In this episode, recorded on stage at our annual conference, Benevity Live, we speak with Rose Marcario, the leader who quadrupled annual revenue to over $1 billion by doubling down on their values. Here's what it takes to really lead with purpose and how bold decisions pay off. So I labeled you a brave, a brave leader in my opening. And so I want to talk to you about that because I've been reflecting, I think as a lot of people probably have, on bravery over the last few months and what it takes to be brave. And I think I've come to the conclusion that it's not an innate quality, that it's actually practiced. And that in order to be brave, you have to be brave. It's super deep, I know, but I think you have to just start somewhere. But I'd love your perspective because I'd love to hear about the first time you felt you were brave.
So first of all, thank you for having me at Benevity Live. And I hope you all leave in the next few days feeling like warriors for good and joyful warriors for good. Because that's what we need right now. But I don't think it's one thing. And I don't think it's one action. You know, when I think through my own career of like, okay, I came out as a lesbian in the 90s when I was a public company CFO. Well, no one was doing that because there was no advantage to doing that. It could only hurt your career. But it was important to me to do that. But I think from suing the president, from, you know, making big changes in my own life in terms of leaving Patagonia to work on climate, you know, I think that I always think of this thing that Maya Angelou said, which is that if you want to practice any of the other virtues, you have to consistently practice courage. And every day we're confronted with moments where we can practice courage. And I really encourage everybody to go through the next 24 hours and to find those moments where you could be more courageous, where you can have that conversation with your partner or with a work colleague or just introduce yourself to someone new. Any of those moments where you can develop and create courage. And you'll see that in a 24-hour period, there are a lot of moments like that. So just consistently work on it. And I think that leads up to these big moments. You know, I think about that image of the guy in Tiananmen Square. He's holding two grocery bags. He looks like he just got back from, you know, just shopping for his family. And he's standing in front of a tank. That's a choice. That's a choice in a moment that was probably built by years of courageous choices along the way. And we're all capable of those moments. And we all might be called to have a moment like that.
Okay, almost already want to cry. That's really, it's actually really moving because it feels so accessible.
Yeah.
So as I was preparing for this, I was thinking of the objections people might have about this conversation, which would be, well, Patagonia is like on the furthest end of the spectrum of purpose. And, you know, every business can't, you know, call itself an activist company, which Patagonia did, I believe. And so most brands will never be a Patagonia or an activist company. And so, in fact, you'll hear a lot of executives say activism doesn't belong in the business. And so I wanted to ask you on behalf of all the more, say, moderate brands in the room, what can their CEOs be doing in this environment to really make purpose work for them? Like, how can they show up with their version of bravery?
Yeah, are those brands that aren't activists the ones that are paying $4 billion a year in lobbying efforts to the government? I don't know. That sounds pretty activist to me. So I don't know if I believe that they're not activists, but I do think that purpose is about why you're doing what you're doing. why you're making this product, why you're selling this service. It's the why. And every company has the why. And what I've learned about being purpose-driven is that the more compelling that why is, the more engaged your employees will be, the more engaged your other stakeholders will be, your suppliers, your customers, and the more successful you'll be and resilient you'll be as a business. I worked on this project after I left Patagonia called Enacting Purpose at Oxford University was doing. It was all about enacting purpose in the boardroom. And the reason was because everyone in those rooms and a lot of public company CEOs and chair people understood that having a deeper purpose was necessary to confront the next generation of business. So I think no matter where you are in that continuum, focusing in and making that why, the reason, meaningful and meaningful to your stakeholders will make you successful. And even if you're doing this work within a company, focusing in on the why and the stories and the truth of it will be compelling and help people feel inspired to do the work.
I'm going to go off script for a minute.
So
question two. But we were talking a bit about the future of business.
Yeah.
Backstage. And this just feels really relevant to that conversation, which was I was asking Rose a bit about capitalism and what the future of capitalism looks like. And I thought your answer was great. And I would love for you to share it because I was saying, you know, it's kind of more mentality. You've got, you know, CEOs or CFOs really thinking about growth at all costs. And how does purpose actually play a role in that?
Yeah, I mean, I have a front row seat to this because I'm a partner in a venture fund where we're funding early stage companies. So these are, you know, young entrepreneurs, and every one of them is working on trying to make the world better. This is how they grew up. This is their mindset because they grew up with the climate crisis writ large. They grew up seeing the inequity. They grew up digitally native. So they have more information at their fingertips than the president had, you know, 30 years ago. They have an incredible view and a global view of the world in a way that we did not grow up in that way. And I think that the brands of the future will be the brands that help make the world better and make the world more livable and focus on making renewable transportation, restoring our planet, circular economies, regenerative agriculture, you know, the things that will work with nature and not against her to create a better life for everyone. And they won't be the companies that we grew up with, like Coke and Monsanto and Exxon. And, you know, the brands that will be on people's lips will be the brands that made the world better.
And I think it's true. And so many of the people in this room are doing that.
Yeah.
Part of their day-to-day job.
Yeah.
And so you talked a bit about the Enacting Purpose initiative and our project and how it shows up in the boardroom. I'd love for, like, can you share some tips? You were in the boardroom, you were advocating, you were, you know, leading those conversations. How can the folks in the room here who are leading their company's impact efforts communicate the value of what they do in the language of executives and shareholders or boards?
Yeah, so I think there's two things. One is like the meta explanation, which a lot of people aren't good at doing, but there's so much data. Like, bring the data. The meta explanation is, if you're not focusing on responsible supply chains, responsible relationship with your stakeholders, climate work, decarbonization, then you will not be resilient. You will not be competitive. You will not have the best people working for you, because the best people are going to want to work on making the world better. And they're not going to just stay at a company that's only desire is to make money and to make quarterly profit. So there's lots of great data that supports this. 90% of the S&P is reporting on climate. They're doing impact reports. You know, 67% or about 2/3 are reporting on diversity, equity, inclusion metrics voluntarily. Well, why are they doing that? Because it's important to the long-term health of the company. And it and they're, the customers that buy their products want to know. So that's the meta kind of explanation. And then there's like the specific business case. And that is unanswerable unless you're within a particular company, right? And you know the details of your company and what's important in the supply chain and what makes, you know, what creates brand risk, what creates risk in terms of attracting the best people, what creates risk in terms of PR, what creates value in terms of becoming more resilient, becoming more competitive, becoming more international. You know, Europe, rest of the world is far ahead of the US in terms of protection of the consumer, evolution of climate work. So yeah, if you want to be a competitive company, you can't leave these things to someone else to do.
Yeah, they're not side of the desk.
Short-sighted if you do that.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about the boardroom and how decisions are made. So in 2018, under your tenure, Patagonia launched the lawsuit against Trump's White House for its plans to reduce the size of two national monuments in Utah. Can you just take us into the boardroom for a minute? Like, I would just love, like, how did that, like, what does the conversation look like that leads to, yeah, we're going to go do this?
Yeah, well, it wasn't in the boardroom. I think it was sort of in the office and over emails. But Patagonia is a private company. And we've been supporting grassroots environmental activism for 50 years. It wasn't a big decision, really, about whether we would join the lawsuit or not, so much as it was a question of the political environment being so divided that I was concerned about the safety and security of our employees. And so there was lots of discussion about that and how to ensure that they would be safe and secure and that we would have the security that we needed. And then the other side of that was, yes, we joined the lawsuit, but as a CEO, I was thinking, well, how do we explain this to our customers? Because I was always struck by the fact that we needed to communicate to our customers these kind of complex environmental issues and why we took certain stands that we did. But I felt it was really important that they understand this. And so I went to our head of marketing and I said, Corey, you know, create some creative so that we can put it on the website. I want the website to be blacked out. And he just looked at me and shook his head and walked out of the room. And then he came back and we only had like a 24-hour period to do this. And he came back with the website blacked out with the sentence, "The president stole your land."
Clothing company Patagonia, they say, quote, "The president stole your land." And they include a link to learn about the decision and to sign a petition against this plan.
Patagonia put that thing on their page, "The president stole your land."
Yeah. Our clothing company Patagonia is suing President Trump over his decision to shrink two national monuments in Utah.
But Patagonia's CEO called Trump's order hypocritical and unprecedented.
Millions of people viewed that day. So anyone who went to our website, that's what they saw that day. So yes, the lawsuit, joining the lawsuit would have been page 50 news probably in a newspaper. But putting it front and center as a part of our brand made it front page news.
It's so interesting. It's how courage can actually become like almost like a commercial value. Like,
it, yeah, yeah. I tried to get other outdoor industry leaders to join us in doing that, but they all told me no. And I think that's a lesson too. Like, don't be afraid to lead and step out.
And so with all of the rollbacks in DEI that we've been hearing about are so many human rights under attack, people who belong to underrepresented groups and companies, I think, are feeling fairly disenfranchised, demoralized. I mean, even allies, right? Like, feeling kind of beaten down, maybe even abandoned by their employers who made big commitments, you know, after 2020. And it's no doubt affecting well-being, productivity and engagement. And so this is kind of the other side of purpose where, you know, if you kind of make some decisions and then change, it can actually have a negative impact. I just ask, how would you advise the leaders in this room to continue the work of building inclusive workforces in light of these memos, orders, and general sentiment? Like, what approach would you suggest?
I think leading with transparency, leading with love, leading with a sense of courage is very important right now. Don't be afraid to be an example of that. And you know, if you didn't believe in diversity, equity, inclusion, and you didn't believe in climate work, then maybe what's going on right now in the political winds is an excuse for you to drop it. Well, did you really believe in it then? No, you didn't believe in it. That wasn't your value that you held. So I think really deeply looking at what your company values are and doubling down on them in a moment like this is incredibly important.
And I think it's nuanced too, yep. Right? Like it's sometimes I think you can feel that your values or how you execute on your values or how you live them is black and white. It's, you know, it's like this, but there probably is some room for flexibility in how you live those values as times change.
Absolutely.
And I think that flexible thinking is probably something we're all exercising right now. So a lot of people in the CSR space and even executives, I think, are actually feeling the pressure right now and uncertain about how to move forward. They're feeling tired or under-resourced. These teams are tiny in organizations, pulling a lot of work through. And they're having to park their personal feelings about some of their work on these some of their beliefs or values around these polarizing issues. And they're confronting, I think, fear at the highest ranks of the company as well. And so what are some tangible steps that people can take, A, to move through fear themselves, or to help others move through fear so that the work can continue as, you know, appropriately for that brand as it can?
Well, I think it helps to realize that there's always evil in the world. There's always people that want to roll back progress, whether it's out of anger or greed or aggression or whatever. But you're still the same you. You have the same values. So that doesn't change just because that evil that's always been there is right in your frame right now, right? That's what a lot of us are feeling. It's like it's right there. But that's also an opportunity. And for me, the things that I do is like I accept the world as it is. I try not to have nostalgia for what it was before. I just accept what we're dealing with right now, and I bring all of my curiosity and all of my energy and all of my activation to this moment in front of me. You know, I turned off this thing on my phone that was showing me pictures from 5 years ago. I stopped it. I had Googled it and figured out how to stop it because I don't want to live in nostalgia because nostalgia will not help us through this moment. So we have to accept the world as it is. That's number one. I think number two is, you know, connect into your tribe, right? Like we're all doing here. Everyone here is connected. This is a really good thing, like to be with our tribe. For me, it's my LGBTQI community. For me, it's my colleagues for years and years that have been working in the environmental movement. For me, it's, you know, I have a big tribe and I need them right now. So it's that. And then I think the other thing is renewing yourself and never forget to take the time to renew yourself. And for me, that's about nature and going out in nature because nature is like the beautiful, perfect mirror to me. It's showing me nature loves diversity. Nature is abundant. Nature can go through anything, can go through an earthquake, can go through a storm, can go through a fire, and it renews itself and regenerates itself. And to me, that is the mirror of how I can renew myself. And I think those three things to me just keep me going and keep me in the fight.
Yeah. And keep you focused on the like the renewing aspects of life. But being present is a really, so you know where I'm going to go. Being present is hard. Like it's a practice.
Yeah.
And for any of you who are, you're all probably going to Google Rose after this. You're going to come across this YouTube video of an interview with Rose with a program called the Inner MBA. And in it, she talks quite a bit about consciousness and your spiritual journey. And I got really excited. I was telling Rose that I was hoping that this whole interview could be about that, but maybe a different audience. But you mentioned discovering spirituality really early on in your life and reading people like Krishnamurti or following Ram Dass and experimenting with different Buddhist practices and techniques. And you talked about the practice of meditation, and I've been practicing meditation for a long time and recently shared that with a bunch of our sales colleagues. And one of our colleagues asked the question of, well, what has meditation done for you, both personally and professionally? And so I just wanted to ask you that question, because when you were talking about nature and you were talking about being in the present, those are very spiritual practices, in my opinion. So I'd just love to hear how you think that those practices of taking care of yourself or connecting to that core have helped you, but you know, both personally but also professionally.
Yeah, well, I think any time that you focus your attention and you're not overly concerned with your own ego, and you know, the work that we all do, like you want to see the result. You know, it's the ego that wants to see the result. I think of my like great grandfather who was a laborer, you know, he came here, he was working, you know, digging the streets of New York for 10 cents a day, build your own shovel, you know, bring your own shovel. And would he imagine I would be sitting here right now? He didn't get to see the extraordinary value he created over the long haul. And I do think meditation is really helpful with that, because it's not about you. It's just about you being part of this natural force. And are you part of the forces of good, or are you part of the forces of evil? I don't mean to be so blunt, but it is kind of that way. That's the way I view it. You know, are you part of advancing the world and making progress and making a more livable future? Yeah. To me, meditation just supports that. It's like a very comfortable seat when things get hard.
And has it helped you make hard decisions?
Yeah, I think it has, because it makes me self-reflective. And anytime you are self-reflective and you are in touch with your value system, I think it's really important to making decisions.
Yeah, and especially now, I think we need to make clear-headed decisions.
Totally.
So you've said that I strongly believe that businesses can be a powerful agent for positive change in the world. And we're picking up what you're putting down. But over the course of this conversation, we've definitely heard how you've lived up to that. I think we could all use some positivity and, you know, thinking about kind of what do we want to take away. And so I'm curious about your perspective on why you think businesses and the people doing the impact work within them are really uniquely positioned to make business better.
Well, I think because we are bringing that future-proofing work to organizations. And that's some of the most important work that's going to happen in the next generation. As we make this big societal transition to renewable energy, to regenerative technology, to circular systems, to regenerative agriculture, I mean, all of these things, to more equity and justice, all of these things are in a really critical part of making businesses successful over the long term and having a long-term view. And if you look at the best companies, they take a long-term view of their success. And I also think that, look, there are those evil forces like we talked about. But there are also the forces for good, the forces for justice, the forces for progress, the forces for renewal, the forces for regeneration. And that's what we're all doing in this room. And you may not get to see all of the things you're working on come to light, but they will come to light at some point in the future, and we will create a better world together.
How do you shift people from the short-term mindset, though, to the long-term? Like, how do you spark that imagination? Because, like, I'm hearing, you're sparking my imagination. That's what I'm feeling. And, like, you're clearly a strong evangelist as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how can this room shift people who are in the throes of, like, the present, needing to meet quarterly results, to really embrace that long-term vision?
Yeah, I think any, you know, and I talk to a lot of boards and CEOs, and I think anybody who does this work, and a lot of boards and CEOs are already know this. They just don't know how to do it, you know, and they're relying on folks within the organization to bring the, you know, the data, to bring the stories, to be the evangelizers. And I think you have to do it to almost every function in the organization. You know, it's a different conversation when you're talking to a supply chain leader. It's a different conversation when you're talking to HR. It's a different conversation, you know, when you're talking to your marketing and comms team. But I know from Patagonia that whenever I double down on our values and wasn't just focusing on, well, how can I sell this new jacket this season? But whenever I double down on our values of about the environment, about our protection of the environment, about our work in CSR and responsible supply chains, those were the moments that connected with customers. And those were the moments that led to, I think, a lot of our economic success during my tenure.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in some interviews you talked about how doubling down on your values will actually drive business value.
Yeah. And I think that you don't know until you do it. And sometimes you have to take small steps and use small examples, right? But you keep working on those and you keep bringing the data, bringing the stories.
Yeah.
And to all of the functional areas of the company.
Yeah, it actually makes me think a little bit about what Miriam said. It's like what you're describing is building a body of evidence that you can then bring a big vision to life. But it's actually incremental. It's not like you're going to go solve this one big thing in one go. And I think we were talking in the back room as well about, like, we just want a silver bullet. Like, we just want one solution, but it's
yeah,
not like that.
It's not.
Yeah.
Life is constant work and constant effort.
So on that note, I was going to ask you, what would you want to leave with this room today? What would you like them to walk out of the room thinking, feeling?
Look, these are difficult times for sure, but difficult times present incredible opportunities. Opportunities to get to know yourself better, opportunities to define yourself, opportunities to create value, opportunities to make big changes in your life if that's what you need to do. I mean, these are difficult moments, but difficult times bring us tremendous opportunity and tremendous opportunity to grow. So I would just say, be a happy warrior. Take on these issues. Don't be afraid to lead. Don't be afraid to stick your neck out. Even if people around you aren't being brave, be brave yourself. You won't regret it.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe wherever you get your podcasts to hear more stories of real people making real change. Till next time.